Today, finally, the topic is minimal models and Ising CFT. Last time we discussed unitarity. So we're discussing in which cases in the Hilbert space of CFT for all vectors chi, non-zero vectors chi, we can show that norm of the vector is greater than zero. After discussion, we got an answer that we can draw plane of C and H for each Wehrmann module inside of the Hilbert space, because before we thought that Hilbert space is always sum over all primary fields of like holomorphic times anti-holomorphic Wehrmann modules. Therefore, to study Hilbert space, and these subspaces, they are orthogonal to each other, and holomorphic and anti-holomorphic sectors, they are independent. So to study unitarity, we just have to study Wehrmann module by Wehrmann module. And Wehrmann module are parameterized by two parameters, central charge, which is common for the whole theory, and conformal dimension. So on the plane of central charge and conformal dimension, we found that obviously all h less than zero are non-unitary, and all negative central charges are non-unitary. So this whole domain, it's non-unitary. Moreover, we found that c equals one is very important bound, and in most of cases, c less than one is also non-unitary. And on the opposite, when c is greater than one and h is positive, here unitary CFTs are living, or like Wehrmann modules for unitary CFTs. However, as I promised, there are more unitary CFTs. First of all, some of them are living on c equals one line, and some CFTs are living even for c smaller than one. But this is discrete, like discrete series. Of so-called unitary minimal models. And as we will see later today, Ising CFT is one of those. Is a particular example. So it lives here. It has central charge equals to 1/2, but it's still unitary. So how can it happen that something with how minimal models occur? How it happens that something with central charge smaller than one is still unitary model. So this happens because of singular vectors. So who are the singular vectors? They are basically such vectors that for any positive n, Ln times chi is equal to zero for some chi in a given Wehrmann module. So imagine we pick some c's between zero and one, and we pick some value of h. and we study Verma modules. Then we have like lots of descendants. We start with some chi. Oh, sorry, with some h, which is highest weight vector. And then we study descendants. We have like one at zero level, one at level one, two at level two, then three at level three, and so on. Yeah, and sometimes it happened that there is a vector which is killed by whole positive part of Virasoro algebra. And yeah, this vector also generates lots of descendants because we can act on this vector by L minus N. And naively, it breaks unitarity because, as we will see in a moment, this vector, it gives zero for Kat-Shapovalov form. Therefore, yeah, there is scalar product. Basically, like it obviously, from this, it follows that also scalar product of the vector with itself, it's zero. So it breaks unitarity. It breaks this condition. But it breaks it in a mild way. It's not like we have negative norm, we have zero norm. And as we will discuss in a second, this part of Verma module which contains the vector and all its descendants, it can be mod out. So we can consider so-called irreducible factor of Verma module, which will not contain any negative norm or zero norm states any longer. And therefore, unitarity will be restored. Yeah, so let's discuss more about these singular vectors. They have nice properties. So first of all, singular vectors are orthogonal to the whole Verma module. It's easy to see because let's pick any other vector, lambda h, and consider scalar product with a singular vector, and this descendant, it's h times some product of lambda minus l minus lambda 1, sorry, without minus, l lambda n, and then we have this singular vector. And this is zero just by definition of singular vector. So this is always zero. Yes?
But if lambda is zero, then...
If lambda is zero, then h, we consider scalar product of h and chi, right? And as we discussed many times, vectors of different levels, they are orthogonal, right? And this, if they are of different levels, then they are orthogonal. If they are of the same level, it means that chi is equal to h because there is only one vector on zero level. And we don't consider case when chi is just highest weight vector. And as a consequence of this, when we consider Kat-Shapovalov form, the vector chi, it always gives singularity of determinant, zero of determinant, since vector chi can be decomposed using some coefficients in terms of other vectors in a Verma module, and therefore like sum over mu S lambda mu C mu equals to zero. So there is like a, yeah, and therefore determinant of Kat-Shapovalov form on corresponding level has zero. If chi of level I. There is another property. The singular vector gives rise rise to Verma submodule. So getting back to this picture, we have Verma module starting from H, then we have somewhere chi, and chi is again its highest weight vector because it's annihilated by all the positive generators. Since ln chi is zero for any positive n, which is one requirement, and there are descendants. Lambda L minus lambda n, L minus lambda 1, acting on chi. So from one singular vector, we can generate a whole submodule. And if you start from chi, there is no way we can escape this submodule because positive generators just annihilated, and negative generators, we go downstairs along this Verma submodule. And we cannot get out of this of span of these vectors. Yeah, and basically we even know what kind of Verma module is that. This is Verma module with like H, with highest weight H plus L, because and where L is a level on which singular vector lives. So there is like embedding. Moreover, this submodule, like it's better to say every vector of this submodule is orthogonal to the whole Verma module. It's also easy to check. So let's take some descendant like this. And let's consider a scalar product with arbitrary vector form from the initial Verma module. Again, we can use definition of descendant. So this is mu times L M L sorry L mu M L mu 1 times L minus L N L minus lambda 1 chi. Oh, it's not mu, it's highest weight vector H. The only chance why this can be non-vanishing is when level where this descendant lives is the same level where this descendant lives. Therefore, like if chi is on the level L, then there is a requirement that lambda 1, sorry, sum over lambda i's should be equal to sum of sum of lambda i's plus L should be equal to sum over j of mu j's, which is a condition that level of this is equal to level of that. And therefore, obviously, sum of lambda i's minus sum of mu i's it's greater than zero. So it's opposite, sorry. Sum of mu i's minus sum of lambda i's, it's greater than zero. Yeah, which means that we have more operators here than in terms of sum of indices than operators here. And now we can start pushing all these operators to the right in the usual fashion. And yeah, because in commutation relations for Virasoro algebra, we have important property plus C over 12, blah, blah, blah. We have important properties that sum of indices on the left-hand side are equal to sum of indices on the right-hand side. So there is a grading by these indices, and this commutation relation, they respect the grading. Therefore, when we push these generators to the right and use commutation relations, sum of these indices, it never decreases. And it never increases. It always stays the same. And because of this property and because of this condition, we can guarantee that this will be sum of some terms when we push all the generators to the right. Some coefficients probably, and then we have situation like H, blah, blah, blah. But here we always have LK acting on chi with some positive k. Because of this condition. And yeah, yes. And this is annihilated by definition of singular vector. Okay. And this is great because this means that not only the singular vector itself is orthogonal to the whole Verma module, but means that this whole Verma submodule is orthogonal to our Verma module. So it's first of all, it's closed under action of generators, and secondly, it's orthogonal to everything, which means that it's natural to expect that we can just decouple it, because it's orthogonal to everything, so yeah, it's kind of invisible. This picture is also very helpful. This is also helpful to explain Katz determinant formula. As we discussed last time, determinant of Katz-Shapovalov form on level A, L, have the following structure. We have product here, R, S greater or equals than 1, where product of R times S less than L. And here we have H minus H RS of central charge with multiplicities P of L minus RS, where H R comma S is equal to H0 plus 1 over 4 R alpha plus S alpha minus squared with H0 equals to 1 over 24 C minus 1, and alpha plus minus is given by square root of 1 minus c plus minus square root 25 minus c divided by square root of 24. So the structure of the formula is that we have some multipliers over h with some values here, and we have these degeneracies. And now, using the knowledge there that every descendant of singular vector gives rise of more vectors of yeah, orthogonal to everything on lower levels, we can interpret this. And the interpretation is following. For some particular values of h, so when h equals to hrs, we have singular on level r times s. So we have this like picture again, and we have chi somewhere and such that L0 chi is equal to h plus r times s times hrs. So this is h r comma s. Now looking at Kaas determinant formula, we see that indeed when we consider L equals to r times s, we have only one contribution here from corresponding hrs, because p of 0 is equal to 0. This is p, this p is number of partitions of this number. And now if we keep the same value of h, and if we go for higher values of L, so if we consider Kaas determinant not here, but on lower levels, like level is increasing in this direction, we can see more singular vectors which are descendants of this vector and which give, which also give zeros for Kaas determinant. So on the next level we have like, oh sorry, on the next level we have one zero, which corresponds to L equals to RS plus one. So P of one, sorry, it's one, sorry. P of one is also one. And then we go on the next level and we have two descendants which give two more zeros to Kaas determinant. So P of two is two, and so on. So basically the structure of this formula just tells us that we have sometimes for some values of h, we have singular vector and we have exactly this number of descendants of singular vectors in the same module on higher levels. And therefore we have these multiplicities of zeros and basically nothing more. So this whole structure, just to recover the structure, we need to know this leading coefficient, which is computable. We need to know these dimensions of singular vectors, which is non-trivial statement that dimensions of singular vectors are, of reducible modules of highest weight vectors when you have, we have singulars downstairs. They're exactly like this. And this multiplicity we already explained. And then there is like simple argument that degree of this polynomial with respect to h exactly is exactly matching degree of polynomial with respect to h, which is also simple estimation. So yeah, we almost understand this Kaas determinant formula. And now like by quotienting singulars out of singulars and descendants and their descendants out of Fermat module, we get so-called irreducible factors. So yeah, they're called MHC. And this is factor of PHC times singular submodules. As we will discuss later, for particular values of central charge, these reducible factors, they will give rise to minimal models. They will be like building blocks of minimal models. Questions on this?
So when you say we model by singular vectors, we model by the whole submodule, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we want to model out all the vectors with zero norm because we want to restore unitarity. But also not always. So let's say we have module with some value of with h equals to hrs for some r and s, and we have central charge smaller than one, and we model out all this submodule, this whole submodule, it doesn't guarantee us that unitarity will be restored. It might still be broken. And cases in which this allows to restore unitarity, so we drop all the vectors of zero norm, but we still can have vectors of negative norm. What we have done, it doesn't guarantee that there is no negative norm vectors. And in most cases, there will be vectors of negative norm, but there are some special cases called unitary minimum models when indeed we, by dropping all zero norm vectors, we don't, and we don't still have vectors of negative norm, so we restore unitarity. So the property which we will discuss with rest of the lecture today is surprisingly decoupling condition. So decoupling condition means condition that these singular submodules have to be decoupled from the rest of the model is very restrictive. For three-point functions, and this is a great thing. It's sometimes called BPZ equation. Let's see. So, first non-trivial example. Is at h equals to h to 1. So here, we plug in r equals to 2 and s equals to 1. So in a Verma module v h to 1 comma c, there is contained a vector, singular vector on the level 2, L minus 2 minus 3 divided by 2h plus 1, L minus 1 squared acting on h to 1. And it's easy to check that this vector is annihilated by all the positive generators. So it's a singular vector, and it gives rise of singular Verma submodule. In terms of fields, this is like the corresponding field chi is L minus 2 of phi of Z minus 3 over 2 to h plus 1 d to z phi of z, where phi of z corresponds to highest weight vector in this module. And we want this field to be decoupled from the theory, which means that we want correlation function chi of z with string of any other fields to be zero. Because, this vector decouples. And now we can use tricks which we discussed on the tutorial and also on the lectures before, that when we have L minus 2 acting on phi, this is basically integral of W minus Z around Z to the power of, in this case, it's just power 0, t of w phi of z. This is action of stress energy tensor on the field. And we can move this contour on the rest of the field. We can push it on string of fields x. And using this trick, we can re-express this as a sum from 1 to n, 1 over z minus zi, d over dzi, plus hi divided by z minus zi squared, minus 3 over 2 h plus 1 d2 over dz squared. And here we have correlation function with primaries phi of z x equals to 0, where x is a string of fields phi 1 of z1 phi n of zn. This is some differential equation. And so if we pick two-point function, and only non-trivial one would be like phi of z, phi of w, or phi of z1, where phi is the same field. There is no extra constraints. For three-point function, we get non-trivial constraint. For three-point function, let's say phi of z with some other fields, phi 1 of z1, phi 2 of z2, for which we have exact formula. This is c h h1 h2 divided by z minus z1 h plus h1 minus h2 z minus z2 h plus h2 minus h1 and z1 minus z2 h1 plus h2 minus h. This gives, okay, let's say this equation star gives two to h plus 1, h plus 2 h2 minus h1 equals to 3 h minus h1 plus h2 h minus h1 plus h2 plus 1. Basically, we just have to act by this differential operator on the correlation function, and then it gives us equation that this should be 0, or c h h1 h2 is 0. So, which means that only case when we can have non-trivial three-point function or this like coefficient between the field, between reducible field which contains a singular descendant and some other two primaries is when this constraint on conformal dimensions is satisfied, which is very non-trivial. This equation can be solved because it's a quadratic equation. It can be solved by H2 equals to 1 over 6 plus 1 over 3 H plus H1 plus minus 2 over 3 square root H square plus H1. Yeah, so this is some a bit ugly expression, but we can use nice parameterization. That h of alpha equals to 1 over 24 c minus 1 plus 1 over 4 alpha squared. And yeah, looking at this parameterization, we can see that it basically resembles a parameterization for the singular fields. So now we, instead of parameter h, we use parameter alpha. And for case of degenerate fields, this alpha is just r alpha plus plus s alpha minus. But in principle, we can use the same parameterization for any primary fields. We get this equation in the form alpha 2 equals to alpha 1 plus minus alpha plus, and alpha 2 equals to alpha 1 plus minus alpha minus, and this is for h equals to h21, and this is for h equals to h12. So it extremely simplifies in this nice parameterization. And this condition between h2 and h1 with fixed h, corresponding to degenerate field, it becomes just linear condition that alpha 2 and alpha 1 have to be equal up to shift by alpha plus, where alpha plus is given by this expression with central charge in terms in case of h21, and shift by alpha minus for h12. For OPEs, since OPEs are very closely related to three-point functions, for OPEs it can be drawn as phi 2 1 times phi alpha equals to phi alpha minus alpha plus plus phi alpha plus for h 2 1. And so basically it's written here, so I don't have to repeat. And phi 1 2 times phi alpha equals to phi alpha plus minus alpha minus plus phi alpha plus alpha minus. So yeah, so when we consider OPE of field phi 2 1 with any other primary, on the right-hand side, we can only get primary with this conformal dimension and phi with that conformal dimension. So it's like it's super restrictive. The OPs are super restrictive. And this is these selection rules are called fusion rules. These are like selection rules for operator product expansion between some special fields and probably general fields, or between different special fields. General formula. Is phi RS times phi alpha equals to here we have sum 1 minus r 1 plus r k plus r equals to 1 mod 2 sum over 1 minus s 1 plus s and l plus s equals to 1 mod 2, and here we have phi alpha plus k alpha plus plus l alpha minus. So if instead of h 1 2 or h 2 1 we take filled with the dimension h r s, we get fusion rules with more other primary fields on the right hand side, but the logic is the same. We write down a singular vector which exists in a Verman module corresponding to this primary, and then we write down this equation, similar equation, not this one but similar one, and we see that there are constraints appearing on conformal dimensions. These have nice consequences. So first of all, primaries, and this is important for us in the following, primaries with dimensions HRS form a closed algebra, closed operator algebra. So for example, when we multiply phi 1 2 times phi 2 1 times phi RS, we get phi RS minus 1 plus phi RS plus 1. And this happens just because if here alpha is some integral number times alpha plus some other integral number times alpha minus, then here we also get filled of the same form with alpha of the same form. Probably I can specify here that phi of RS is phi alpha plus R plus alpha minus S. This is the same. Also, another nice thing is that commutativity of fusion rules also restricts them. And it's easy to see. So for example, let's say R and S are equal 2 and 1. So phi 1 2 times phi 2 1 equals to phi 2 0 plus phi 2 2. And we can multiply them using the same fusion rules. We can multiply them in the opposite way, like this, and we get phi 0 2 plus phi 2 2. So just opposite order cannot change selection rules for us, and we see that this term it's coinciding and these terms they're different. There is no way they can be the same. Therefore we can prove that this fusion, this product only contains one field on the right hand side, and there might be no other one. So we can constrain, using commutativity, we can constrain these conditions even more. Now, finally, minimal models. So, minimal models are models where degenerate, this filter called degenerate, degenerate fields form closed algebra, closed operator algebra, closed and finite, and finite. Operator algebra. And no other, and yeah, closed and finite operator algebra. So basically, this rule, they tell us that, okay, if you take this degenerate field, that then we cannot get out of degenerate fields. But still, using like, if you have phi 1, 2 in a model, but multiplying it with itself, we can get infinite number of fields with higher values of these indices. So this process never stops. We just multiply and multiply and multiply, and how higher powers will get, give us more fields. But in some very special cases, number of fields can be finite. And this can be illustrated in the following way. Let's draw like 1/4 of integral lattice. And yeah, in this direction it will be R, in this direction it will be S. So this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, let's see. So 4. It's not very well drawn, but still. And on this lattice, let's draw a line. Some line like this, and yeah, let this line have slope theta, and this theta is such that tangens of theta is equal to minus alpha plus divided by alpha minus, where alpha plus and alpha minus are still given here. There is the same alpha plus and then alpha minus as usual. It can be shown, it's like exercise in trigonometrics, that if you have, and this parameterizes the central charge, so basically this is function just of the central charge of theory. And it's easy exercise to show that HRS is equal to H0 plus 1 over 4 delta squared alpha plus squared plus alpha minus squared, where delta squared is a distance, where delta is a distance between line and point RS. Oh, RS. So we have, like, let's say we have R equals to 1, S equals to 3. We pick this point. And then we can compute this distance. And this distance is called delta, or delta RS. And conformal dimensions can be expressed in terms of this. And you can ask, like, okay, why do we care? And the reason why we care is because if this number, tangens of theta, is is not rational number, we have okay, the values we have infinite number of different HRS and also arbitrarily close to H0. So yeah, it's geometric, some geometric picture that when we go of along the line of irrational slope and we measure distances to all the possible integral points, these integral points can be arbitrarily close to this line. So yeah, this is close, this is closer, and this is the closest one, but they can go as close as possible to the line. And for yeah, there are like different consequences. So first of all, in this case, it's hard to expect that there will be finite operator algebra due to the reason which I will explain in a minute. But also, if C is smaller than one, so if C is between 0 and 1, H0 is smaller than 0, and therefore HRS can be smaller than 0 for some R and S. Which means that in this case, in the model you're made out of degenerate fields, we have negative conformal dimensions, and then unitarity is for sure broken. There is no way for theory to be unitary in this case. Let take tangents of theta to be some rational number p over p prime. In this case, line at some point it hits directly one integral point on the plane, and then it will be periodically hitting other integral points. So the expressions for central charge, can be written down. Yeah. So remember that this ratio is, minus alpha plus over alpha minus. In this case, central charge can be written as this, quite simple expression, and HRS can be written as PR minus P prime S squared minus P minus P prime squared divided by 4 P times P prime. So central charge is a rational number as well in this case, and therefore sometimes these CFTs are called rational CFTs because their central charges are rational numbers. And also conformal dimensions of primaries are rational numbers. And here we can, because of symmetry, we can assume that P is greater than P prime. So we can easily observe that we have symmetries. So first of all, there is a symmetry that H R S equals to H R plus P prime S plus P. Which is great, which means that we can shift the whole lattice by some vector P prime P, and conformal dimensions of fields here will be the same as conformal dimensions of fields there. We can say now that we want all the fields with same, we don't want to have multiplicity, so all fields with coinciding conformal dimensions are the same fields. Therefore, independent fields are living only here in this, like in this, it's not corner, but shape L region. So we have some fields here, we have some fields here, and all the fields which are living upstairs and to the right, they are basically the same fields which with those which are living in this region. And there are also another two symmetries, that HRS plus R times S equals to H P prime plus R P plus S, or this is the same as H P prime minus R P plus S. And a similar symmetry is that HR comma S plus P prime minus R P minus S equals to HR 2P minus S equals to H 2P prime minus R S. Which is not exactly like this, but but still it's very useful because it tells us that if you take field with this dimension and if we go on a level R times S, we get another degenerate field with this dimension. So if you consider this in the opposite way, this tells us that this field with this degenerate field with this dimension, it's a descendant field in this module on the level R times S. So like the picture which we had before, it becomes even richer. So we have like this one, P prime plus R, P plus S. We have H R comma S, and on the level R times S, we have another degenerate field with this dimension. But this degenerate field, it also contains some other singular vectors. So we will have like iterated picture. And not only on level R times S, but also on this level, we have another independent degenerate field here. So we have here like on a level P prime minus R, P minus S. And here we also have like submodules and submodules. So this is like recursive picture of like degenerate fields contained inside of modules corresponding to other degenerate fields. And all these fields, to obtain irreducible factor, we need to mod out. So basically we drop this whole thing. And yeah, there is more structure here, but it will take more time to discuss it. But for now, important outcome is that we have some extra symmetry. So these fields, they're not independent fields, but they are descendants of this field. So basically we need only to consider this field. Yes.
So does this mean that they don't give like independent constraints on correlators?
Which ones?
Yeah, the degenerate in the degenerate module.
They give, yes.
So they still give independent constraints?
Yeah, you can also write down the coupling condition for this, and you can write down the coupling condition for that. And this they don't give, yes. You just write down these two, yes.
Okay, because otherwise I would have like infinity of constraints and I would...
Infinity constraints can reduce to finite system also. So now the important outcome is that we have like another symmetry, basically. These fields with these dimensions, they're not independent, but they're the descendants of this initial field. And the result of these symmetries is that only independent fields are with indices 1 less than equal r between 1 and p prime and s between 1 and p. And moreover, we have also another symmetry which can be observed there, that h r s is equal to h p prime minus r p minus s, and this means that we have square here, square like this. And we only have to consider fields in this square of width p and height p prime. And also this condition, it tells us that fields here are not independent, but they are like they're dependent with respect to symmetry, reflection symmetry around center of this square. So this field is the same as that one, this field is the same as this one, and this is the same as that one. So in total, we have pi minus 1, pi prime minus 1 over 2 independent fields. And yeah, this is, yeah, and theory with such values of p and p prime, they are called minimal model MP P prime. And yeah, they have this number of independent fields. Okay, and finally, Ising CFT. The Ising CFT is M43 unitary. Apparently, this particular minimal model is unitary. Minimal model. And let me draw Katz table. This table with fields corresponding to integral lattice, they are called Katz tables. So yeah, 0, 1, 2, 3, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and yeah, we have a line goes like this. Yeah, and non-trivial fields are living here. And yeah, we can. So first of all, central charge of this model, it's equal to 1/2. We can compute this just from formula for central charge, because p minus p prime is 1, and p times p prime it's 12. 6 over 12 is 1/2, and 1 minus 1/2 is 1/2. This is first thing. Fields are like, there is like identity operator in any CFT, there is identity operator. This is like main point of CFT, which is phi 1 1, or according to the symmetry it's phi 2 3. There is a spin field corresponding to just operator sigma I, and it corresponds to phi 2 2 or phi 1 2. There is energy operator or like thermal operator, which corresponds to coupling between different spins. We also had this operator in Hamiltonian of Ising model, and it corresponds to a field phi 2 1 or phi 1 3. So if you draw them here, here is operator epsilon, here is operator sigma, and here identity operator. And again, like using formula for conformal dimensions, we can finally compute their conformal dimensions. So H and H bar for sigma equals to 1 over 16, 1 over 16. And conformal dimensions for energy operator is 1 comma 1. Oh, sorry, it's 1 half, 1 half comma 1 half. Not 1 comma 1. Great, and therefore we can find scaling dimensions. Delta sigma equals to 1 over 8, and delta of epsilon equals to 1. We also have fusion rules, and fusion rules are consistent with Z2 symmetry. So sigma times sigma equals to 1 plus epsilon, sigma times epsilon equals to sigma, and epsilon times epsilon equals to 1, which is some extra data which there is no way to extract it from Ising model. I mean, we can, technically it's similar to like naive things. So when we multiply two spin operators, we get something quadratic in spins, but also we have something trivial. When we multiply spin and energy, we get spin, and when we multiply to energy operator, we get trivial operator. And finally, using this, we can find that operator dimensions, which in a renormalization group flow picture, they are related like that. So this critical index is 15 over 8, and this one, it's equal to 1, which gives for critical exponents of corresponding statistical model, alpha equals to 0, beta 1 over 8, gamma equals to 7 over 4, delta 15, nu 1, and eta 1 over 4. And as I promised at the beginning, we can find exact values of critical exponents for Ising model using CFT. That's it. Any questions?
How do I get the structure constants, the values?
Using these naive considerations, you cannot do that. But I guess, there is so-called Coulomb-Gauss formalism, which allows you to construct the same CFTs using free bosons, basically. And in this consideration, everything can be reduced to computation of some finite dimensional integrals, contour integrals, and you can find structure constants. Alternatively, these models can be realized as coset models in some Wessel-Zemino models, in some Kant-Smoody algebras. And you can also compute them using cosets. Yeah. Okay, then see you tomorrow on a tutorial.